Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Running Start by J.A. Sutherland. Narrated by Elizabeth Klett. Chapter 1. Mason's legs burned and his breath rasped in his throat. A quick glance behind him showed the flashies still in pursuit, but at least they were on foot. No air cars or hover bikes were visible. He thought he might have even gained a little on them, but it was hard to tell in the shadows of street level. High above, most of the lights on the crosswalks that blocked out the sun were out as well, maintenance in the lows not being much of a priority. He also wasn't sure why they were chasing him. He'd been coming down the hall from school, minding his own business. He'd heard the mids didn't have to go to school. They just got their classes on their explants at home, or implants if they were particularly high in the mids, he supposed, but he'd never seen anyone with a real implant except the flashies. Even the teachers had explants. Why the mids could study from home but the lowlies couldn't, he wasn't sure. Something about them not being trustworthy. Had to have the lowlies in a classroom where they could be seen and not cheat. He dragged his mind back from one of the tangents he so often found himself on to try and figure out his current situation. Mason had just stepped off the walkway between buildings when someone yelled, "There he is!" Long experience taught Mason that it was best to run when you heard something like that, even if you weren't the target. Run now and sort it out later was a good rule for a lowly to heed. It wasn't until he looked behind him the first time that he saw it was flashies chasing him, and then he really got scared. No run-in with a flashy was good, but especially not if they were specifically looking for you. At best, they might think you'd seen something and want a statement. That wasn't so bad in itself, but when whoever was involved in what you'd supposedly seen found out, well, whether you'd seen it or not, it was better not to take chances. That was another rule to live by. He wasn't really very good with the rules, at least the ones about other people, but when the consequences were getting beat up, or worse, he'd learned to make an extra effort. Mason darted to his right into a darker, narrower street. There were a few lights from glowing signs in the windows along it, but most of it was cast in shadows. It was the sort of street Mason knew better than to be on, even with a few others, but he figured with the flashies right behind him, what could get worse? He found out when an arm came out of the shadows right at neck level. Pain shot through him, his teeth clacked together, and he suddenly couldn't breathe, even though he really wanted to scream. His feet went out from under him as his upper body stopped in place and he went down hard. Dirt and gravel and bits of torn-up street dug into his back. He heard a horrible, scary sound, a sort of repeated gyuk, 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 and realized it was him trying to breathe. Hands rifled his pockets.
Anything?
Nothing.
He got a plant?
He tried to raise his hands to stop them, but someone knocked his arm down and stood on it, grinding it into the street. Fingers plucked behind his ear and he wanted to cry. His mom couldn't afford another explant. He rolled his head to the side, but the hands grasped his hair and pulled it back.
Hold still, kid, or I'll cut you.
He heard the buzz of a vi-blade and froze.
That's better.
The fingers plucked the bud from behind his ear.
Now hold still and keep your eye open, if you want to keep it.
More fingers pried his eyelid open, and he could see the blur of the vi-blade right in front of him.
Hey!
Shouts and footsteps rounded the corner.
Flashies! Bounce!
The hands left him, and Mason rolled on his side, still making the gyuk, gyuk noise, but not as bad, and he felt like he was getting some air. But they'd gotten his explant bud. The screen on his right eye just showed a miserable puke-green message. Lost signal. He made it to his hands and knees, and that seemed to make his breathing easier, until new hands grasped his arms and dragged him upright.
My explant, he managed to gasp out. They took my bud.
A face swam into view in front of him. It was one of the flashies, his face red and sweaty. He looked like he was having nearly as much trouble breathing as Mason was. Thoughts of the lost explant bud went out of his mind as the Flashy's fist connected with his gut.
Don't ever make us run.
Doubled over, air gone from his body again, he had a bare moment to see the Flashy's stun stick coming for his head.
Stop resisting.
Chapter 2.
Next case, Mason Oliver Guthrie.
The court clerk's voice cut through the crowded room, blasted from the speakers like some kind of sonic crowd control device. It had to be, in order to be heard over the babble of voices from the 100 or more men and women crammed into the small space. That and the crowd noise hurt Mason's ears, but he heard it even through his cupped hands. He couldn't make himself respond, though. The night in the cell, he assumed it was only a night, but it seemed like so much longer, had been more than he could take. The crowd all around him, people jostling him, touching him, it had all been too much. He'd finally worked his way to a corner and faced the wall. He couldn't get down on the floor and curl up, there wasn't even room for that, but he could put his forearms against the wall and hide his face in them. A few of the others in the cell hit him and called him names, but they'd eventually left him alone when he didn't move or react. Eyes closed, he'd kept his forearms against the wall and tried to pretend there weren't so many people around. Then the crowd had started to move, and he'd been forced to leave the relative safety of the wall. Guards with stun sticks opened the cell and waved everyone down a corridor, whacking anyone who moved too slow. The stun sticks were on a lower setting, so they didn't knock anyone out. They just hurt and then numbed whatever got hit. Mason's stomach rolled over and over from the stress of the crowd, but he managed to hang back until some space opened in the cell, then follow the crowd without anyone too close. The guards only hit him twice to get him to move faster. Then they'd filed into another cell, or maybe cage was a better name, because the walls were wire mesh, not bars. This one was even smaller, and the crowd shoved inside was worse. Mason balked at the entry, but a stun stick jabbed into his lower back, and another guard shoved him inside. Too many people, too close, he couldn't handle it. He hunched his shoulders, crossed his arms, and tried to bury his face in his own chest.
Next case, Mason Oliver Guthrie. The call came again. Mason Oliver Guthrie, last call.
The words penetrated the shell Mason was trying to build around himself, and he struggled back. If they were calling him, he had to answer, not because he cared about what was going to happen next, but because it might mean they'd take him out of the cell. Anything was better than staying in this crowd. He worked his jaw, blinked his eyes, and called out,
"That's me! Here!"
Mason raised his hands over his head to be seen. He had to raise both of them, as they were cuffed together at the wrist with thin plastic bands. His stomach hurt, and he was still dizzy from the stun stick. He also felt like he was going to throw up, but that was either from the after effects of the stun stick or the stench of the bodies around him. He tried to get through the crowd of bodies to the cage door.
"Hey, let me through, okay?"
Grudgingly and slowly, the mass of men between him and the smaller hearing area at one end of the room parted a bit, and he managed to shove and slide his way through. Two heavily armored and visored Flashies met him at the cell door.
"Guthrie?"
one asked.
"Yeah, that's me.
He broke off as they each grabbed an arm and yanked him from the crowd to stand before an old, worn lectern a few meters away.
"Mason Oliver Guthrie."
Mason looked up. There were three vid screens on the wall in front of him. The one in the center showed a heavy-set older woman with a light sprinkling of gray in her blondish hair. The screen on the right showed a well-dressed woman with the vacant stare of someone intently accessing an implant and paying little attention to her physical surroundings. The left screen was blank. Mason figured the woman in the middle was the judge. She was wearing a robe, but he wasn't sure about the other one. He'd never been in court before. He still wasn't sure why he was here or why they'd picked him up in the first place. When he woke up from the stun stick, his head throbbing from both the stun and the lumps, he was stuffed in a cell with 100 other guys overnight. None of the Flashies would answer his questions or even acknowledge him. They'd ignored everyone until morning when they started herding the whole group out of the cell, cuffed them again, this time in front at least, and moved the whole crowd down a narrow, stinking hallway to this room.
"Yeah, I..."
"ID scan,"
the flashy on his left barked, giving him a hard shove and pointing to the top of the lectern. They'd taken his explant screen out and the bud was long gone, but there was an old-fashioned scanner on top of the lectern. Mason raised his hands and put his right index finger on the scanner. There was a flash of light and a quick sting as it read his fingerprint and took a DNA sample for confirmation. A light on the top of the lectern glowed green, and the judge grunted.
"Let's get started, then," she said. "You have counsel?"
"What?"
Mason was more confused than ever. He just wanted to go home and make sure his mom was okay. She'd been sick more and more often lately, but wouldn't see a doctor because it cost too much, and she'd be worried when he hadn't come home last night.
"Lawyer," the judge said loudly. "Do you have a lawyer?"
Mason shook his head.
"No, I don't even know what..."
"Public defender appointed,"
the judge said, cutting Mason off. The third vid screen lit up and showed a heavy-set black man in a rumpled suit. He glanced up once, seemed to nod to Mason, then looked down again. Mason thought he looked exhausted, like he hadn't slept in days. Or maybe he had, since the suit looked like it could have been slept in repeatedly.
"Prosecution ready?"
"Yes, Judge Conway."
"Defense ready?"
"Yes, Your Honor."
"What's the plea?"
"Not guilty, Your Honor,"
the black man said.
"Wait," Mason yelled. "I don't even know what I'm..."
One of the flashies shoved him again.
"Speak when spoken to," the judge said, "or I'll order you stunned and you can spend the rest of your trial on the floor in a puddle of drool and whatever else leaks out. Are we clear?"
Already stunned, speechless by what was happening, Mason merely nodded.
"Answer me, Lowly."
Yes, sir. Clear. Your Honor?"
"Good. Now let's see what we have."
The judge's eyes grew vacant as she accessed her implant. "Okay, so trespassing, vandalism, destruction of public property, destruction of private property, unlicensed modification of a state-owned media device. You've been busy. Sylvia?" Mason's head was spinning even more now. What were they talking about? He hadn't done any of those things. "Yes, Your Honor, thank you," the woman was speaking now. "We have multiple reports from the building superintendent at the Park 500, lower-level housing project where the defendant resides. On repeated occasions, the defendant has entered areas off-limits to the tenants and caused incalculable damage." She paused as though referencing something. "Piping leading to 7 food dispensers, several environmental units, and the building's news feed." Mason almost sighed with relief. His shoulders sagged with the release of tension and his legs felt weak. If that's what this was about, then it was nothing but a misunderstanding. He could explain those things.
"You've got it all wrong," he said. "I didn't break anything. I fixed those things."
He held his hands up, gesturing at the woman, the prosecutor.
"Look, the whole 12th floor was having trouble with their food dispensers. They'd get nothing for a week. They had to bum food from everyone in the building just to eat. And when they did start working, the Nutrimash was spoiled. The pipes in the distribution room were installed wrong, see?"
He tried to draw the problem in the air with his hands, but the cuffs interfered.
"There was this weird bend for no reason coming off the building's main supply line, and it got clogged up. Then, when the pressure unclogged it, what had sat in the pipe for so long was making people sick. So I just rerouted it, and there hasn't been a problem since."
The judge and the two lawyers were staring at him, so he went on.
"Now, the environmental units in the building have this really weird design defect in their circuitry that throws them into a reset cycle for hours. So I came up with this fix with Mr. Matthews at school. He's my engineering teacher, and I've installed that in a few units. They work great now, but I don't have enough parts for all of them. And Mrs. Spence in 12C, well, she couldn't get a net connection at all. So I brought a signal tester home from school and figured out that the antennae on the 12th floor's repeater were mismatched. Most of the signal was going over to the next building and not ours at all. So I fixed that, and the whole floor doubled the speed of their connection, so..."
"Bradley, is your client changing his plea to guilty?"
the judge asked, interrupting.
"No, Your Honor, absolutely not."
The public defender glared through the screen at Mason. "Young man, you need to shut your mouth right now or I can't help you."
"Help me?" Mason said. "I haven't done anything."
"Exactly. Not guilty, Your Honor. And I'd ask that the entire interruption be stricken from the record as unresponsive. There was no question pending, and he wasn't even sworn in as a witness. I'd hate to see an outburst like that taint the record."
"As would I," the judge said. "It's so ordered." She stared at Mason. "All right, folks, let's have no more interruptions like that. Evidence?"
"We have the building superintendent, Your Honor," the prosecutor said. "He's positively identified the defendant and provided security footage of the defendant entering secure areas, as well as images of the damage done."
"There was no damage,"
Mason cut off as the guard to his right placed a hand warningly on his stun stick.
"He's available to testify?"
the judge asked.
"Absolutely, Your Honor."
"Defense?"
The public defender's eyes glazed for a moment as he accessed his implant.
"Your Honor, it looks like the boy's a good student. I mean,
not so good from what I can see in the record," the prosecutor interrupted. "Very poor grades in social assimilation and civic conscientiousness. His teachers have given him an aggregate 5.6 on the Morgenstern Disruptive Personality Scale."
"But quite high in his science courses, chemistry, engineering."
"All right, Bradley, that's enough," the judge said. "It's not as though some lowly's going to need those. Not sure why they even teach them still. More important to get those sorts of kids ready for the jobs they're capable of, or at least teach them to live peacefully on their stipends and leave the rest of us alone." She fixed Mason with a stern glare. "And not vandalize the systems the state so generously provides them." He shook his head. "Anyway, the important question is whether he's a danger to society or not, and that MDP rating worries me. Do you have any actual witnesses to call?"
In looking at the records, Your Honor, perhaps a teacher or two, and maybe some residents of the building. There's a mother, I think."
"Yes, the mothers always give honest testimony. The others are all character, I suppose, and nothing concrete," the judge muttered. "Are they available?"
"It's a work day, Your Honor. We could call on them, but..."
"Never mind. I've been watching the security recordings here, and there's no doubt about who did what."
She focused on Mason, who had to stop his eyes from jumping back and forth between the screens, still trying to understand just what was going on.
"How old are you?"
I 17, ma'am. 18 in 2 months."
The judge frowned.
"Any documentation on that?" she asked.
Mason blinked. He'd ID'd himself at the start of this. That should have shown the judge all his records. Wouldn't they confirm his age?
School records is about all there is," the public defender said.
"Worthless," the judge said.
"Damn lowlies always lie about their kids' ages to start getting the full stipend early instead of just the dependent enhancements."
She took a deep breath. "All right, we'll call it 15 years old. That looks about right. Make that official. My finding is guilty on all counts. Sentence as a juvenile. We'll put him in, Bright Horizons has room. So Bright Horizons until he's 18, or has a 3.0, or lower MDP for 6 months running. Next case."
Chapter 3 The flashies grasped Mason's arms and dragged him from the room before he could recover enough from his astonishment to object. Behind him, the court clerk's voice bellowed over the speakers again, calling the next name, and the crowd shuffled as that man made his way forward. But Mason was already through the door and into a dimly lit corridor.
"Hey, wait, guys, this has to be some..."
One of the guards spun him around and slammed him face first into the wall. A hand on the back of his head pinned him there, grinding his face against the hard, gritty surface.
"Shut up," the man said.
Mason grunted as another flashy jabbed him in the kidney with a stun stick, thankfully off, but the impact still sent a new blossom of pain through him.
"And stop resisting," the one holding his face to the wall said.
Mason closed his eyes tightly and tried to nod, but could barely move his head. It must have satisfied the guard, though, because he yanked Mason back into the center of the corridor and resumed walking. Mason was beyond astonishment now, and well into fear. Other guys in the tower had been picked up by the flashies. Some came back, others didn't, and he'd heard some stories. One thing they'd made clear: don't screw with the guards once you're taken. You didn't want to screw with the flashies in the corridors or streets, either. Not even with the ones patrolling the real streets between towers, where they never went in numbers less than a half dozen. But more than the flashies, you didn't mess with the guards. The flashies might mess you up, but the guards... Well, one of the guys came back with a story that he'd seen someone mouth off once too often, and the guards had taken him up, way up, past the mids to the very top, given him one first look at the open sky, then sent him back down to the lowlies again. By the express, they called it, and made sure everyone knew it. Mason kept his head down, shuffling his feet to keep up with the guards, but not so quick they might think he was trying to get away. The corridor opened into a tube station, but one unlike Mason had ever seen before. It was certainly as dirty and ill-kept as the stations he was used to, maybe more. But instead of lines for the boarding platforms, there were cages. Six on each side of the platform, with wire mesh stretching from floor to ceiling and locking doors facing the platform in the tubes. Guards stood at each door and elsewhere on the platform. "Bright whores," one of Mason's guards called out. "Three left," a guard on the platform answered, pointing to one of the cages. They marched Mason up to the door. Three other guards came over from around the platform, shock rods out and ready. Those were worse than the stun sticks carried by the flashies on the street and in the courtroom. These were designed to incapacitate with pain instead of just knocking someone out. They swung the cage door open, shoved Mason inside, then closed the door with a resounding clang. The guards who'd taken him from the courtroom turned and left without another word, and the others returned to their places on the platform. Mason looked around the cage. That was really the only description he could come up with. He supposed it could be called a cell, but it felt more primal than that. There was crediting the space with too much humanity to call it a cell. He felt like he'd just been shoved into a cage without any regard at all. There were three others locked in with him, all three clearly lowlies like himself. They had the paleness that came from living inside all their lives, or, if they ever went outside, still being in the artificial lights that lit the lower levels of the city's towers. Even the two with darker skin had that look. The kind of paleness lowlies got was more than pigment. It was skin, eyes, hair. Everything was just muted. Mids like the teachers at his school seemed astonishingly bright and healthy in comparison, and the tops, like the prosecutor and judge, well, you could tell they lived where the sun streamed through windows all day long. No, there might be some UV in the lower-level lighting, but it wasn't the same. The three others in the cage were spread out, each going to a separate corner. One was a skinny black girl who'd claimed a corner on the platform door side, away from the tube itself. She had moved down the wall when the guards came to put Mason in, but she was back in the corner now. Mason moved to the fourth corner, also on the platform side, as that seemed to be the thing to do. He met the black girl's eyes briefly, but they both looked away. The other corners were occupied by two guys. One Mason thought was his own age, but the other looked much older. That one stood a head taller than Mason and sported a beard and mustache that was fuller than Mason or anyone his age should be able to grow. His real age, not the bogus one that judge had assigned. That brought his thoughts back to his trial, and he snorted derision. Some trial. He'd heard the stories from those who'd been picked up, those who'd come back at least, but thought they were just making the system out to be worse than it really was. Now he'd had a first-hand experience with it. His legs felt weak as the reality of his situation struck him, and he put his back against the wire mesh of the cage's side, then slid down to sit on the bare concrete of the floor. He drew his knees up, rested his forehead on them, and closed his eyes. What just happened? Yesterday he'd been going to school, enjoying it, at least the science classes. Maybe not the bogus society classes, but definitely the science ones. He'd been talking with Mr. Matthews about the possibility of college. That was expensive, and he wasn't quite sure there was a point. Sure, he could take out loans, but then he'd have to pay them back, and the difference in earnings didn't seem that great. Realistically, a kid from the lower levels could get a job, but not one of the great ones. Maybe be a nurse, or an orderly, or some sort of engineering assistant. Not a doctor, or an actual engineer. The mids took all of those jobs. He'd looked at the salaries for those jobs and the degree costs to be able to get one. Really, he'd still spend about 20 years living off the basic living stipend and working just to pay back the education loans. Mr. Matthews, his teacher, seemed to think it was worth it, though. Mason felt his eyes burn and rubbed them hard on his knees. No chance of that now, though, not with a record. That made him wonder what his mother would think, which made him wonder if she even knew. Had they notified her? Or was she sitting at home, not knowing what had happened? Crack! Pain lanced through Mason's side, and his muscles jerked, flinging him to his side and onto the hard concrete of the floor.
On your feet, Lowly. No sitting. Tube's coming.
Mason blinked away the pain and looked up at the guard just outside the cage. The man slapped his shock rod into the palm of his hand, then cocked his head to one side.
You need another one? On your feet.
Mason sprang to his feet, ignoring the pain in his side. The air still held the tang of ozone from the rod's discharge, and he felt like his whole side was on fire. He clutched himself and edged away from the cage wall, out of reach of the guard's shock rod. The guard appeared on the verge of saying something more, but just then the platform vibrated with the approach of a tube capsule. This one eased to a stop near Mason's cage, and the guard walked away without another word. Unlike the passenger capsules Mason was used to, this one had no windows. A door in its side slid open and three guards exited. One went to the tube side door of Mason's cage and opened it.
Move along, Lowlies, the guard yelled, gesturing toward the capsule's door.
Mason and the others in his cage moved hesitantly toward the door.
Move along!
The guard swung his shock rod at the nearest of them, and they picked up the pace, crowding through the cage's narrow door and into the capsule. There was another cage there, filling the capsule's rear, and they were herded into it. This was a smaller space. In addition to lacking the windows of a regular passenger capsule, this one was also about half the length. Most of that was the caged area, with a smaller space near the only doorway for the guards. The capsule took off, propelled by the tube's magnets into the near vacuum of the main tunnel. Mason couldn't tell how fast they were going, or, without windows, even where in the city they might be. Their arrival at Bright Horizons, Mason could tell that's where they arrived, because as soon as the capsule's door opened, he was faced with a brightly colored but chipped and stained mural with those words, along with a rainbow, unicorns, and some sort of horse with wings. He thought it also said, "Welcome to," once, but that was chipping too bad to be sure. Someone had run big scrapes across one of the main letters, too, so it really read, "Come to Bright Horse." Mason wasn't impressed so far. He was even less impressed when they herded him and the three others into another room and ordered them to strip. The skinny black girl looked around, scared, and one of the guards smacked her with a shock rod, and she fell to the ground, crying. That got Mason and the two other guys stripping as well, no matter the embarrassment. They all stared down at their feet, not wanting to do anything to attract the guard's attention. The stress, the fear of one of the guards lashing out with a shock rod, not knowing what came next and worrying how it could be worse, because so far every step had been worse, left little room to think about the others seeing him naked. He hunched over, trying to hide himself and avoid looking at any of the others, even the girl. Then they were marched into another room, after the guards made a show of bagging up and inventorying all their clothes while they stood around naked. The guards closed the door on the new room, which was tiled from floor to ceiling, and the ceiling as well. As soon as the door clanged shut, foul, chemical-smelling water started spraying from pipes in the ceiling. It was ice cold, and all four of them hunched over, covering themselves. Then a guard's voice came over a speaker.
"Clean up, Lowlies! You're in there until you're clean enough, so scrub down."
Mason and the others made some tentative scrubbing motions to spread the nasty water over their bodies until the guards were apparently satisfied. The water stopped spraying, and the doors opened. Each of them was tossed a threadbare towel and a stack of clothes, orange pants and shirt that closed with Velcro fasteners that just pressed together, along with a pair of slippers and what Mason would have thought was underwear, if it hadn't been dingy, stained, and nearly see-through.
"No dressing yet,"
one of the guards yelled, seeing the girl start to slip her new clothes on.
"In here."
The next room had a couple benches in the center, but the guards didn't tell them to sit. Instead, they just pointed to a vidscreen mounted to the ceiling above their heads. A second later, it came to life, with a bored-looking guy dressed in a midi suit with a...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?